should be grateful to God for the blessings he's given us.
Don't let anyone tell you that America's best days are behind her.
We have got to fight for this nation, because I believe with all my heart this nation is in fact one nation under God.
Great to be here. Hey, it is great to be back. I was on vacation last week. I know many of you know that. Saw my post on Facebook or heard me sign out on last Friday, a week ago. But sure do appreciate all of you. Thank you for being with us. We are live today on this June 22nd. Got a new opener. That's our new opener for this hour, like that. Anyway, sure appreciate all of you again being with us. Hey, if you want to queue your call up, 610-363-1110. So Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has recognized the significant, this is Mike Pompeo's quote, a significant advances of Mexican operations. Is talking about this notion. Remember, they had a deal on Mexico slowing down the flow of immigrants. He says they've dramatically reduced the migrant flows to the United States. And that's part of an agreement between the nations. Mexico's foreign minister said yesterday that this is going to continue. And hopefully it does. Pompeo said on Twitter that the U.S. and Mexico share so much more than border. Pompeo said in a post on Twitter that the U.S. and Mexico need to continue in meeting the Mexican's president's demand to slow down traffic at the border, and we need to continue to build up our cultural ties between the two nations. Hopefully, we will do that. And it is great. This is going to be good for both America and Mexico. We are working on a solution with Mexico on a number of different trade issues, now that we know we have a Mexican president that is working with us. And they have slowed down. Remember, their goal is to slow down the flow coming across their southern border out of Central America. And that has stopped significantly. Apparently, there has been a bust as well in Nicaragua of the gang members, and that's been good as well. So lots of good things happening. You know, we're getting more cooperation out of the Mexican president than we're getting in all of Congress to do anything about our own border security. I think that's pretty pathetic, but it is what it is. The other thing I wanted to point out is China investment in America down 90% since President Trump has been in office. China's investment in America is down 90% since President Trump has been in office. Now, there are all kinds of reasons that are out there as to why this is. Well, it's like that because, you know, we've had trade tariffs. Okay. It's like that because President Trump has been so demanding and hard on China. Let me tell you what this is about. It's just my opinion. And it's not an opinion you've heard yet anywhere else. But let me just tell you my opinion. First of all, when I used to get on the air 7-8 years ago, I would go on the air and talk about China buying up our tillable land, our agricultural land in America. And people would call in outraged. How can we let that go on? China coming in, buying some of the biggest, greatest office buildings in the U.S., in New York City, in Miami, in parts in Dallas, and all around the world. We all got an outrage, but nobody did anything about it. Listen, this president, it is understood around the world that you can't buy him. You're not going to change anything he does. You're not going to get away with anything as any foreign company. You're not going to be able to come in here and buy up our tech companies or our farmland and try to get away with hurting the U.S. economy. That they're going to be watched very, very closely. They don't want to be under the thumb of President Trump. And I guarantee you, if we get a new president in 2020, God forbid, you wait and see how that changes in a heartbeat. It is peace through strength. It is about strength that is helping that situation with China. All right, we got our ag report coming up. Very important. We'll be back right after this.
This is Craig Helgard with your Financial Issues Ag Update. I would look for the traders to be focused on weather this week. Over the weekend, rains in the Western Corn Belt were better than forecast. At the moment, the focus is on the 10-day outlook, which appears to be playing out better for moisture than previously thought. And that's probably going to pressure prices to start the week. On Friday, the corn market finished roughly 6 cents higher. We saw active fund buying to close the week off of Chinese rumors, a report from NOAA saying that last month was the hottest June globally on record, and bargain buying after a down week also helped push prices higher. As I record this, the overnight spot corn futures are reversing Friday's gains and are trading 6 cents lower. Soybeans rallied Friday after spending the majority of the week under pressure. November futures closed up 20 and a quarter cents for the session. Helping encourage the bulls were reports circulating that Thursday's call between the U.S. and China went very well. There were also rumblings that the 25% import tariff could be waived for Chinese buyers on soybeans, pork, and cotton. Either way, Chinese buyers were fishing for U.S. bean offers at a handful of export houses on Friday. U.S. soybeans out of the Pacific Northwest are trading at a discount to Brazilian beans for the August-September time period, and it sounds like China still needs some coverage for that time frame. Potentially accelerating the situation were reports that the protein content in Brazilian soybeans is down for the first time in 4 years, and that has some traders debating the possibility of China canceling Brazilian purchases and switching some of those purchases to U.S. origins. In the overnight trade, spot soybean futures are trading down 6 cents. The wheat market saw some short covering on Friday, with prices also being helped by reports of slightly lower yields out of Russia, which could potentially lower their exports as we go forward. In the overnight trade, Chicago is trading 7 cents lower, Kansas City is down 4, and Minneapolis is trading 2 cents lower. Cotton futures had a very nice session to end the week. December futures were up 136 points as they closed at 63.07. In the overnight trade, spot futures are trading an additional 31 points higher. Livestock futures were higher straight across the board to end the week on Friday. For the session, August live cattle finished 20 cents higher, while August feeder cattle were up 55 cents for the session. Lean hog futures enjoyed a solid performance as well, with August $1.10 higher, while October futures finished today up $2.25. After the close, we had a very neutral July cattle on feed report. Cattle on feed were seen as 101.8% of last year's numbers, while cattle placed on feed were at 97.7%, and cattle marketed in June were at 97%. All those numbers are basically what the trade was expecting. After several days of stronger closes, we saw Class 3 milk futures take a small step backwards on Friday, with the August futures ending the day 3 points lower to settle at 1766. In the overnight trade, spot futures are trading 4 points higher as I record this. In the cash markets, choice beef boxes were 8 cents higher to settle at $213.42, while selects were 90 cents higher for the day, settling at $189.51. In hogs, the pork carcass values finished $1.93 higher to settle at $78.53 per hundredweight. This has been Craig Helgard with your Financial Issues Ag Update. We'll be right back with more financial issues after this.
Welcome back, Financial Issues. Welcome back, Financial Issues. 610-363-1110. If you want to queue your call up, now would be a good time to do it. 610-363-1110. We're going to go right to phones. We'll stay with phones. Try to stay with phones for the rest of the day. I know we've got a lot of penned-up questions because of the vacation last week. I did get a chance to relax. It was a wonderful time. And sure appreciate all of you bearing with us. Thank you. And we're going to get to phones. Let me go to Rory. Rory's calling us from... Rory is gone. Rory, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. All right.
Good morning. Good morning, Dan. First and foremost, I just want to thank Almighty God that he's using you as an instrument, and you're not ashamed of the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ, that good news. Thank you, Dan.
Oh, man, thank you for that.
Thank you for your stand.
You're welcome.
I greatly appreciate that. You and I both know that's the most important of all things.
Amen, brother.
My question is about, you know, the cyclical nature, Dan, of the pay period.
Yes.
And when you think in terms of dollar cost averaging, I'm a skeptic now, so bear with me.
Okay,
right?
That's okay.
Is it possible that the big players in the marketplace are manipulating and basically slowly, you know, the drip principle, taking from the average investor? You know, we're investing on twice a month we're paying into the market, and that is a guaranteed influx of, I'm going to say, billions of dollars every 2 weeks.
Yes,
is that possible? That's being manipulated. You get my question?
I think I do. I mean, so I guess I'm not sure. I'll say this. Are markets aware of that, and is that being somewhat taken advantage of? I would say yes. I don't know that it is being manipulated, other than being manipulated by some, not all, because there's only about a 15% of mutual funds that could really do this. They may participate in a manipulation in some way, shape, or form for their own purposes, not their own personal gain. I don't mean that, but for the gain or the personal a business of the mutual fund companies themselves. But I think that because of that inflows into retirement accounts, which is where 80% of the wealth in this country is, and it's trillions of dollars, and as you say, billions going in on a monthly basis. When you look at that, it has become so consistent over so many years that it is, in fact, a part of the ebb and flow of the market. And it's a very consistent ebb and flow of the market. So anything that could be used to manipulate that, it's hard to use something that is consistent. It becomes a part of what's happening in the market more than anything else. So when you look at the markets and you look at the economies and the inflows and outflows, that's already accounted for. That's a part of it because it is so consistent that it doesn't change. Because it doesn't change, it doesn't really have the ability to impact it in the sense that the only thing that would impact it if it were to all stop, or not all of it, but let's say if 40% of it stopped for a month, which is extremely unlikely, then yes, that would have an impact in a negative way. If 40% of it dramatically increased in a month, then yes, that would play a part of it. What does manipulate the markets, and we're not talking about the economy, is the unemployment rate. So we get more, as we get more and more people working, more and more people are participating in these plans, and that helps the market. And when we get more and more workers getting more and more comfortable and secure with their jobs and what is going on, then that helps the markets because the tendency is to put more money in on a you know, payday basis. So it all goes back to the economy, and it's the economy still, and yes, because of some of those things that are happening, it's the economy that drives all that. And without a good economy, the positive consistency begins to wane a lot. That's what happened in 2008 in particular, and it really didn't start coming back until the end of 2009, 2010, when everybody panicked and stopped, and it was well over 40%. But the thing of it is, the market was going to crash with or without that. It didn't matter. It was somewhat irrelevant because did it exacerbate it? Did it make it a little worse? Sure it did. But it didn't matter. It was going to happen one way or another. And so I guess what I'm saying is the markets is bigger than just that. It is far more dependent upon so many other things because the markets go up and down. Yes, inflows drive markets up and outflows drive markets down, but it all goes back to stock price and individual companies and the economy and how those companies are doing because you don't have inflows if the economy is bad and those markets are doing bad and those companies aren't doing well. You don't have those inflows. And you don't have the outflows when things are really good. So yes, all of that impacts. But you know what? And I've said this for years, and I said this very early this morning to somebody, that it's all somewhat irrelevant because it all goes back to the markets, and I think, or to the economy. Because I think it is, you know, I used to lead a men's ministry every Friday morning for years and years. And, you know, we used to talk about different things. We'd go through scripture. And we used to always talk like everybody knew, because I always said when we talk about sin, and I was talking to men here, I said, you know, it all goes back to pride. We can trace all of our sin, you know, for the most part, back to pride in some way, shape, or form. And, you know, it's a bad comparison, I guess, but at the same time, markets can all be traced back to things that are happening in the economy, whether it's the global economy, the local economy, the national economy. Aside from all the inflows, outflows, and all those things, all of the things that drive markets like inflows, outflows, all of those inflows, outflows are driven by the economy. It's all about the economy. And this is why the Democrats can't wrap their arms around this notion that we were a private sector economy that is driving the economy. We're private sector corporations that are driving the economy. They almost despise the fact that government has little to do with that other than setting policies and fiscal responsibility. But it's all about, it all goes back to the same thing it went back to 120 years ago. When things were good, people bought stuff. And when people bought stuff, companies need to make more of that stuff. And when they made more of that stuff, they became worth more money and their stock prices went up. and they became more valuable. Nothing's changed. I mean, it really hasn't changed. The way we calculate it, the algorithms, the way we look at all these things, without getting too deep in the weeds, yes, there's a number of factors that have changed. But when it's all said and done, all of those things, like those inflows, I'll tell you what the market makers, the traders on Wall Street, the institutional guys, what they will manipulate more than anything is they will take advantage of you and I. They will take advantage of the traders. There could be an argument made, I don't make this argument, there could be an argument made that the news media can create so much negativity that the mom and pop investors, as we're called on Wall Street, the average Joe, is going to sell. And when they sell, they just let it happen so that they can come in and buy. And then they'll come back in and buy and drive the market up, and the mom and pop investor will start coming back into the market. Is there some manipulation there? I think there is. There definitely is. That's why here, financial issues are one of the things that I've been intent on trying to do for the last 23 years, is to try to convince people to act like the big traders, to take advantage of the same thing. Don't fall prey to that. Don't be one of those investors that is falling prey to good news and bad news. I'm buying on good news, the worst thing you could do, and I'm selling on bad news, the second worst thing you could do. So, you know, don't do that. You know, start buying on bad news and selling on good news. And so trying to change that mindset, and that's how we start to see an even trend. Playing floor, but you have to understand that we've got $17-18 trillion in retirement accounts. That's an enormous amount of money. And when you look at that, the vast majority of that is held by guys like you and I, you know. So it's an interesting notion. I appreciate it, Rory. I know I went way down. I'm trying to make a little sense of it. It's hard. So I would say, yeah, you're partially right. I'm partially right. You know, somewhere in the middle lies all this problems, but it's very, very difficult to manipulate. It's very easy if you have millions and millions of dollars to take advantage of what is happening though. And I think we see a lot of that. All right, folks, we'll be right. Let's get back to phones, 610-363-1110, 610-363-1110. Let me go to Todd. Todd's calling us from Arkansas. Hey, Todd.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
The question I got is, I got a 401k with the company I'm working with right now that I'm contributing to, and I got a Roth 401k with a broker that lives here in town. I got it with Edward Jones. Just because I had a prior 401 that I cashed in and put in there in a Roth. And I got we have a pension plan. We can take our pension in a lump sum. I think I'll be eligible to retire in 5 more years. And my pension, I can either draw like $1,400 a month, or I can take a lump sum of like $230,000, and I was just wondering, which do you think I would be better off with taking the lump sum and putting it, like giving it to a broker, or would I be better off just drawing a monthly pension?
Well, I would tell you that every broker is going to tell you to take the lump sum. That's for certain. I can guarantee you that. I would have to wait until you're ready to do that in a couple years and see what the markets look like, and then see exactly what the amount of money you're getting monthly with some kind of spousal benefit, if you're married, to, you know, in case you go before your spouse, that she's still able to collect something. So I would look at those numbers, and then I would look at the lump sum they're offering, and I would do some calculations of income that could be generated on that and see what is going to be a better deal. Remember, the $1,400 or whatever you're going to get at that time is why you have the pension, to generate permanent income. And you're going to add that permanent income into your Social Security. Thereby, your 401k or Ks, 401ks, your 401ks, they can be your other money that are generating some additional income and you're using for different things. And that would be fine. But it really depends. If you're getting 2 years from now, they're saying, okay, we're going to give you $1,500 a month, or we're going to give you X amount of dollars. And the X amount of dollars, if you take that X amount of dollars and times it by 5%, and that is more than the monthly amount you're going to get by a significant amount, then yeah, I would take the lump sum. If it isn't, you know, why go into the market where that income is going to fluctuate based on the earnings? Suppose you get with a bad financial advisor that puts you in a lot of bad stuff or doesn't get you out of the market quick enough when the market crashes, and it will crash in your lifetime more than once. And now all of a sudden your $300,000 is $150,000, which can generate enough income to supplement your income. I mean, I always elect to take the sure thing when it comes to income, unless it is grossly under what a reasonable conservative investment advisor could make in individual stocks. And I don't mean make by gain. I mean generate by income and dividends that those stocks pay. So I couldn't tell you what to do a month from now, let alone 2 years from now, but that's some of the things that I would look at then. Unless you have to make a decision now, I wouldn't even be thinking about it.
Yeah, I was just kind of planning ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, it's too, you know, we don't know what this market's going to be. We might be in a depression, you know, 2 years from now. Or, you know, it might be the greatest economy in the history of the world. I don't know. So I don't like people to think about it, because you get that in your head and you stop looking at what the economy's doing and what is really the best thing to do for you. All I can tell you is every broker is going to tell you to take the lump sum at no matter when it is and what's going on in the economy. They're all going to tell you that. I've never been in that camp. I believe income is ultimately the thing that's going to give you peace of mind in your retirement years. And so I think real closely about that.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you, Todd. God bless. Yeah, remember, folks, what the broker tells you they're going to do is strictly based on some set of assumptions. They don't know, you know, they're not even looking at the economy. They're looking at, they're probably going to put you in an annuity. I just think you got to think real closely about it. Do you want to be at the mercy of the markets? If you don't need the money and you don't need the income, different story. Go ahead and get at mercy at the markets. Probably serve you good. All right, let me go to Renee from Virginia, or Renee. Renee, you with us?
Yes.
Hi, Renee.
I'm calling for my husband. He's 44 and has no retirement. Where to start?
Well, the best thing to do is to get an account open. 44, you still got plenty of time. You'll be okay. But you've got to be very committed to putting in, you know, a little bit of money into it. Now, I would go to a brokerage company like a Charles Schwab or a TD Ameritrade or an E-Trade. You can go online. If you go online and you go to, say, Fidelity.com and open a Roth IRA account, then the account form will come up and you'll be able to fill it out. It's very safe. You don't need money to do it. You just need to get the account open. Then what I would suggest that you do is, and they'll help you with this. There's a phone number on there wherever you go, and you can call them. And they'll show you, there's a form that if your husband gets paid every other week, then every other week on payday, you'd have it set up that every other Friday that $20 is coming out, $50, whatever you can do. It doesn't matter. Do as much as you can, because I know you'll realize after a while you can probably do more. So I would do as much as you can, have that come out, get into, put this into this Roth IRA account. You may want to just do a couple of Timothy ETFs in the beginning. And they have two ETFs. You might want to just split that up about 70% into one and 30% in the other. And when you get to that point and call me back, I'll give you those symbols. But that would be a good strategy in the beginning. So every time you put $20 in, 70% of it's going to go into one and 30% is going to go into another. And just keep doing it. And try to put as much in as you can. And over the course of time, I think you'll do very well. You can't worry about things being up. You can't worry about things being down. There should be no reason you would ever stop unless, unless he becomes unemployed and you just can't do it anymore. But aside from that, just not look at it, not worry about it. Just continue to put that money in on a very regular basis.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, that's a great place to start. Thank you, Renee, I appreciate it. Let me go to Mary's calling us from Texas. Hey, Mary.
Hi. Yes, I had a question in reference to Social Security.
Okay.
My husband's 9 years older than me.
Okay.
And I always kept joking with him, I want to retire when you do. And he finally came home one day and said, I've got good news, you can retire with me because since I'll be 70, Your Social Security won't change. So that means like when I'm 62, I can retire with him. Can you just elaborate on that, on how that works?
So he's going to start taking Social Security at 70.
Correct. And I'm 9 years younger.
And are you working?
I am, but I'm contract. So I want to be able to travel and do some things.
Okay.
So my understanding is, by what he was saying, is that I could take Social Security at that time, that mine would not change anymore since my spouse is 9 years old, or since my spouse is already taking it.
Yeah, so you get your work, you get your, you pay your taxes through a 1099, correct? You get 1099?
Correct.
Okay. Correct. Yeah, that's right. I mean, nothing's going to change for you even now. I mean, regardless, because it's going to be based on your average contributions. That's not going to change no matter what. And your husband's now receiving the maximum amount. That's great that he was able to wait till he's 70. So, you could start taking Social Security when you're 62 someday. If the Lord calls him home first, then you can collect his Social Security. If that's more, I suspect it might be.
Correct. Okay. I just wanted to confirm that because
yes,
came home and said that, and I was like, oh, let me check.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Right. All right. Okay. Thanks, Mary. All right. Bye-bye. We're going to get to a break. We'll go back to phones. 610-363-1110. 610-363-1110. If you want to queue your call, you're welcome to do it. 610-363-1110. You're listening to Financial Issues. I'm Dan Seeley. It is great to be here. We got another hour and 15 minutes. We're going to continue to take your calls. Hope you'll do that. Cue your call up. We've got lines open, 610-363-1110. I'll be back right after this.
The opinions and recommendations expressed by Dan are his own and do not necessarily represent the opinions of this station or any of the show's sponsors.
Welcome back, Financial Issues. I'm Dan Celia, 610-363-1110. All right, let me go back to phones. Let me go to Brian. Brian's calling us from Ohio. Hey, Brian.
Hi, Dan.
Good morning.
I'm retired, and I'm in the income portfolio.
Okay.
My position right now in the EFT2 is currently 8%.
Okay.
I'm a little concerned, not sure whether to invest another 7%, which is a lot of money, and decrease my cash position or hold off because of my confusion over the investment return involved.
Well, how much is, like percentage-wise, how much is your cash position?
At the moment, it's approximately 24%.
Okay. No, I would like two things. Are you going to be drawing the income, Brian?
I haven't as of yet, but...
But will soon?
Maybe next year.
Okay. So, yeah, I would like to see you, since you're an income investor, increase, maybe, or I guess I should say decrease your cash position by maybe, you know, 5 or 6% anyway. And, but I would rather you look into some of the things that are producing a little bit more income, percentage-wise, and maybe something that you understand more, a little bit more comfortable with in those other areas that I suspect you might already own.
I do, yes.
Yeah.
I'm pretty much covered in your in the portfolio, except for maybe one or two things.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I would probably gravitate to becoming maybe... let's just say 6%, just to make it easy. Maybe put 3% in two different utilities, even though you may own some of those utilities already. But I think it might not be a bad idea to get a little overweighted in areas that are going to pay a little bit more, maybe be a little bit more consistent.
But when would I continue to invest in the EFT2 then?
Yeah, I would wait until at this point. So what are you confused about with that? Are you just don't understand how the income comes in?
Well, there hasn't been any income from that outfit. May and June showed nothing. Well, June showed, I guess, it said the yield would be 1.7% or something like that.
Yeah, June paid out. Now, you might not have received it yet for some reason. I don't know why. But, or if you go to your brokerage and you pull up a monthly statement, like month to date, you know, up to date statement, and look at the income side of that mm-hmm. statement, you might see that it's already paid into your money market account. Just might not be very much, and maybe you didn't notice it, but it should have paid out. So check that out. But yeah, I'm hoping that the income on that is going to be at about 2.25%, 2.5%. If it isn't, then I'll probably change some allocations. That's a new fund. So in a new fund, we don't have any track record. Now, we are getting, you know, likely to get some gain on the fund itself, and it's going to make a payout at the end of the year, not December 30th. It may be in October or November, maybe before that they're going to pay that out. But nonetheless, If you're doing it for income and you want to try to increase your income, then I would wait. The thing of it is, if you do it now into the ETF, then you're going to participate in more gain at the end of the year, even though the fund itself could be down, but there's going to be more gain going into your account if you do that. So I don't want you to not do it at all, but you may want to watch it for the next couple of months and then see if that's something that you would want to, you know, that you have a better understanding of and you kind of have a better feel for what it's paying out.
I was thinking maybe I could go 2% in that and then take the other 5% and put that in some
higher paying. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's fine. I wouldn't have a problem with that at all.
Good. Thank you very much.
All right, Brian. Thank you. Let me go to Walt. Walt's calling us from Georgia. Hey, Walt. Walt? How about Diane?
I'm here.
Hey, Diane.
How are you?
Good.
I'm hoping you could give me some perspective on whether or not several years ago, before I started listening to you, I bought an annuity. And I am at the point, I just got the annual statement, where there is still a $4,000 surrender charge. So we've gone from 10 or 12 to 4,000. And I have bought several pieces of real estate that for the same amount of money, they're bringing in more than this promises to pay out eventually on a monthly basis. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if I would be better off to just bite the bullet, take the $4,000 loss and buy another piece of rental property and let it go ahead and start be an accruing. What do you think?
I think it's a good idea. I wouldn't have a problem doing
okay.
it.
Okay.
Do you have gain in it? Do you have gain in the annuity?
I don't think so. I need to call the person who sold it to me and ask if there's a figure, you know, that if you kept it to fruition, it's valued at, like, I put 100 in, it's valued at 130 if you keep it till it's vested.
Yeah.
But it's my understanding if I sell out now that you only, whatever, you know, that you don't get that.
Yeah, you only get the contract. Sure you only get the contract value. So is the contract value over 100?
I don't think so. Well, yeah, it is. It's like 104, but they told me that if I'm reading it right, that if you sell it out, you're going to take a $4,000 loss off the original 100,000. So you're telling me if it's showing 104 or something that should impact if I surrender it.
Well,
I should be close to even.
Yeah, because the surrender charge is calculated based on a percentage.
Okay.
So there is, if you have your policy and you look at the surrender charge schedule that's in the policy,
okay.
you'll see that, you know, after 1 year or after 2 years, it went down to something percent, and then it went down again, then it went down again, and so on. And it's based on percentages. But it's based on the percentage of the contract value, not on the original principal. At least that's the way it should be. I'm not going to guarantee that, but you can ask that question when you call. So I would, you know, somewhere it's either noted on the statement or it's definitely in your policy. I know that because it's a law. It has to be. So you can look to see what the percentage is based on this date. And say, you know, let's say it's 2%. Is that 2% going to be on my contract value of $104,000? And so you should ask that question and know that, just so you know what to expect.
All righty. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, Diane. Thank you. God bless. You know, it's a shame, because everybody, if you have an annuity, take a look at that, you know, and say, okay, I did this 8 years ago. Now I'm getting out 6 years ago. Now, you know, I put 10,000 in 8 years ago, and, you know, now I've got, what do you have? You know, don't care about that, the value that you're going to get income on. Don't forget about that, because that's not your money. People say, well, this is a good deal. It's grown. No, really? Can you take it out? No. Well, then it's not yours. You don't have it. I mean, you know, you've got to commit to a lifetime benefit to get that money out. And even then, you might not get it out. So that's just a calculating number. That's the number they're going to calculate. So they say they're going to calculate their income that they're going to give you. That's all that is. And so it doesn't mean they're going to say the income is whatever it is, what they want to, what they're able to give you. And they're going to say, yeah, it's calculated on that amount. But that doesn't help you if you need the money. All right. We're coming up on a break. Then we're going to get back to phones. We have lines open, 610-363-1110. 610-363-1110. If you want to queue your call, you're welcome to do it. As soon as we get back, we will get to calls and give you a little update on some other economic numbers that we need to be thinking about as we get into the week. Look, trade is still front and center, but we're seeing some maybe movement, not with China, but maybe some movement with trade that could be very good for us moving forward. And we're going to watch that very, very closely. I am so interested in watching so closely in the moves that the Commerce Department is making and the president is making in reference to trade, because it's going to impact the overall economy here in dramatic fashion, either one way or another. And we're going to continue to watch that. All right, we're going to go to this break, and some of you have to leave us, but if not, we'll be back right here. Remember, check out our phone app, Financial Issues, phone app, so you can listen to this next hour. We'll be right back. God bless.
If we ever forget that we're one nation under God, then we will be a nation gone under.
Thank you for joining us. This has been an FISM production.